The following is brought to you courtesy of the No Phony Podcast Network, home of independent awesomeness.
If you want something bad enough, you'll figure out how to do it. It's Venice, dude. Everybody's under the influence of a lot of things. All right, welcome back to another episode of On the Road with Jim and Casey. With me, as always, James Morganti.
That's right.
Joining us today, actor, producer, writer, and old friend, Alton Clemente. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Very good, man.
Good.
So, Alton, tell us a little bit about yourself. We graduated. Well, no, you graduated a year ahead of me.
Year ahead, yeah.
And kind of disappeared from our area, as far as I know. I mean,
yeah,
we kind of lost touch.
Yeah, no, I, long story short, I've been out in LA 13 years. Before that, I was in New York for 3. So, you know, it's a long time. Before I officially moved up to New York, for a couple of years, I got a gig where I was kind of doing this show at colleges around the country. So that kind of got me traveling around just the US a lot. And I was doing that through the school year. And then I did that for a couple of years and then moved to New York. So yeah, I've been gone for 16 years. So,
wow.
Okay. Been a second.
So, what did you go to college for? What did you do?
So I went to Albright, and I majored in theater and history. And, you know, it was funny because my first year at Albright, I really wasn't involved, in their theater program. But I had to take an intro to theater course, and, the instructor, her name was Dr. Lynn Morrow. She used to do the musicals at Muhlenberg High School. Okay. And so my freshman year, I was a complete jackass. So I had, like, you know, bleached blonde hair. I was just always hungover in class, probably. And I remember she didn't even realize who I was until like halfway through the semester. And then it clicked. I could see it click. And she was like, "What are you doing?" Like, and I was like, "I don't know." And she was like, "Just come by the theater later." She's like, "This is stupid. I don't know what's going on." So I was like, "Okay." And, you know, then I kind of just popped in, started helping out, and then, you know, slowly got involved and, you know, kind of just built from there.
So you've been totally gone for 16 years between New York and LA.
Yeah.
How does that make, because I was gone for a few years here and there in Austin and like out in, I mean, Philly's not really that far, but are you married now?
No, single.
Totally single, right? Okay. All right, here we go. Me too. When you're out for so long, and you know, I get it, you know, you're around all the, you know, I know how it kind of is. I mean, I'm a musician.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, there's pounds of women everywhere. Or, right. Or I'm sorry, piles. And do you feel like all that time is gone? And do you ever feel like, because I missed home also, and yeah. I guess the question is like, do you ever feel like, man, I wonder what would have happened if I would have stayed home? And like kind of just like came out here to work here and there instead of just moving totally away and then coming back or whatever, you know, right. Obviously you're there for good, I'm assuming.
Well, you know, well, it's two parts to that question. So I would say as far as that, like, no, I think if I would have stayed here, I just would have gotten in trouble. You know what I mean? Like I was always drawn to a bigger city just because I think culturally, no offense to the area or anything. I actually love it here. There was more to do. You know what I mean? There's more people to meet. There's just more options for you. And I think there's more options to get lost. I kind of like the idea of, you know, everybody not exactly knowing what you're up to every day. So I never really thought much to that. And like I said, if I stayed here, I don't know what would have been too different. Other than I probably would have gotten a little trouble because I would have got bored and done dumb, stupid things. But then the second part of that question, it's funny because it was like, I never really thought about coming back from LA, but because of the times that we're living in right now, it's pretty crazy. Both of my careers, acting, the TV film industry and the bar industry, are pretty much on indefinite hold. So, you know, I'm kind of toying around with the fact right now of actually coming back here until this kind of opens up You know what I mean? And I can start making money again. Because right now I'm literally just wasting money on rent because I can't work. And so I'm just kind of looking at that, like, when does that open up? And to be honest with you, I don't see large bar gatherings happening maybe until next year. And I know nobody wants to hear that, but I'm just being realistic about that. And as far as TV and film, I don't see any kind of in-office auditions happening for a long time. Pretty much it's all going to be self-tape. And I can tape from here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And anyway, I can fly out if I need to, you know?
And that's what I was like, in a way, why would you right now, thinking like right now, I mean, as a musician, especially, I mean, even as a musician, why would you move to a big city when you could, and I'm not, you know, hey, this is just a hypothetical person. I'm just making him up now. You could just leave Austin and come back to your parents' house, living in their basement, staying here the whole time. And then, you know, doing your videos. You could, like, all your auditions, it's saving you gas, saving you money. Because they're good to do, but, like, a lot of times they're not a loss. Because you always learn in some way or whatever. But,
sure,
like, it's fiscally a loss.
Well, yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I'm on unemployment right now. And hopefully, you know, that's going to go on for a little bit. But yeah, you know, I mean, rents out there, you know, you're paying close to $2,000 a month for a studio apartment, you know, and if you're not working, what's the, you know, what's really the point of being there, especially with everything being shut down? And LA, you know, being a more progressive city, they've already extended their stay at home orders until August 1st, you know, so I really don't see that lightening up anytime soon.
For sure.
So you guys might see me around here more often. I don't know. We'll see. Right.
And so, like, you say about the bar, your bar gig, Alton. Tell us a little bit about that. Is that what you're doing?
I mean, well, you know, just it just worked out that way. Like, when I kind of got involved, when I knew I was going to pursue acting, you know, I knew, well, I need to make money on the side and I needed to be flexible for auditions, right? So for me, bartending, I was good at it. I was able to be fast at it and make a lot of money. So, you know, that, you know, really paid a lot of the bills over the years. But the bar that I just, you know, my latest employment, I was the GM there for the last 6 years. And it was a really sweet bar. Actually, Jimmy, you'd love it. It's the second oldest bar in LA. We do a lot of live music acts. We do stand-up comedy. We do burlesque. And the really cool thing about it, opened in 1915, oldest bar on the West Side. And we have our first level bar and then we have our downstairs bar. So during Prohibition, the first level bar was a grocery store. The downstairs was the speakeasy. So it's a legit speakeasy.
The best damn grocery store in town.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's a great spot. Super busy on the weekends. It basically would turn into a club. You know, I'm talking like, you know, we'd turn 500-600 people in a night.
And what's the name?
Just rocking and rolling. It's called Townhouse.
Townhouse, cool. Now, let me ask you something. You might not know this, but Casey and I always debate over this. He's saying, what I said is, the world's never been like this, shut down like this. He said it was worse than this for the Spanish flu. What I said was, the bars weren't closed on the Spanish flu, right? They didn't close restaurants during the Spanish flu. They were still open, Casey. Okay, so it hasn't been like now.
Everything that I've read says that...
I would say that, you know, I would have to do some research on that, but just thinking, I think it would be harder to regulate that during that time period than it is now, because we're all on our phones and being able to be tracked at every second of the day, you know? It's definitely a very interesting, weird time.
That's sure. Why they want us to be 6 feet apart, guys, okay? Because what they want to do is vaccinate us in the hand, and then that's going to have nanotech in it. That's going to track you. And that's why they're like, oh, no, social distance, because if you're too close out of 6 feet, well, that's the GPS tracking exact length. And they're going to be like, which one is? Oh, they're banging. That's what they're doing, hard and fast. And so they're just going to think we're all, like, having sex all over the place. But, okay. Yeah, man, dude, I always thought that I like L.A., especially, like, Sunset. Mm-hmm. And that area is cool. It's a big rock town. Like, have you noticed that? Like, it's a lot of... I haven't been there for about over a year, 2 years now, but it's very like 80s, 90s rock music, right?
Well, you know, I'd say it depends on where you're going. I mean, you know, definitely the Strip. I mean, you're definitely going to have clubs that are kind of have always been, you know, leaning that direction. But yeah, I think rock's always has like an influence in Los Angeles. I just, It just does. But, and you know, the thing with LA, it's just, you know, it kind of leads the trends in a way. So, you know, right now it just seems that 80s and 90s is popular in pop culture. So I think you're seeing a lot of those sounds come through in music as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I see what you're saying. I think it really depends. Like, to me, I associate kind of the East Side with rock. You know, I think the West Side may be a little more eclectic.
So Alti, when you decided to move to LA, did you know anyone there or did you just...
I knew a handful of people. So when I, you know, when I went to New York, I remember moving to New York, and again, I knew a handful of people. And, you know, when I went there, I only had a couple $1,000, man. No job. I just kind of was like, I'll figure it out. And I figured it out. And it's, you know, it was definitely tough for a little bit. But, you know, I figured it out. And I remember when I made the decision to move to LA, it wasn't, in my head, it wasn't as daunting as the move to New York. And I don't know why, but I was kind of like, well, if I figured out how to do it there, you know, New York, you can do it anywhere, right? So you're like, you know, I felt that I was equipped because I had that experience under my belt of starting over. And so when I went out there, luckily, one of my classmates lived out there. So I crashed at their place for probably a week or two and then found a spot and then just kind of, you know, built it from there, I guess.
I think I feel you because I feel like LA is easier to live, to like get to and live because you can, I mean, besides the traffic, but you can leave there. But Manhattan, it's like when you're there, if, I mean, we all have friends that live in the city.
Right.
When anything happens, they're stuck. And have you ever noticed this about New Yorkers? Nothing. I love New Yorkers. I love them. The one thing, and you know, we have a lot of problems too. The one thing, and my friend Lindsay, I know she's probably watching this. Sure, we'll watch this. You have to go to them. Do you ever notice people that live in New York, they're never like, oh, you know what, man, let me come out to Reading and have some, or,
well, hey, that's very true.
Downtown.
No, yeah, that's very true. But I will say, like, in LA, because LA is such a massively spread out city that, you know, like, I live in Venice right now. So it's like my friends that would live, you know, if I have a friend that lives in Pasadena, we would see each other once a year because it's like, I got to hit traffic and drive to Pasadena. That's a 2 hour, it's 2 hours, man, you know? So it is funny, like geographically, how that works out. But yeah, I get you. I think anybody that's in a big city never wants to get out of the big city because they're like, "Oh, just come here," like, you know.
Yeah,
because
you're trapped in a prison, kind of like that. Yeah. Which I love city. I do like. I'm with you on it because like I went out to Austin and I didn't even know. I mean, the reason I got there is because I knew this girl on Instagram that was hot that knew all these chicks.
That and sounds great.
Hey, come hang out with us. You could stay at me and my boyfriend's house. I was like, cool. And she like knew all these people. Perfect. And then I just got in with basically just meeting people and I'm very outgoing. So
yeah,
but, like big cities are, out, man. Yeah.
You know, I think everybody, I think it depends on anything in life, right? It's like, if you want something bad enough, you'll figure out how to do it. And exactly. If not, then you can always come back home and figure it out again, you know? And I mean, I've known like quite a few people in LA that have gone through periods of time that they've literally lived in their car. They had a gym membership. They could go there and shower. You know what I mean? Like, but they would do that between kind of, you know, figuring things out. I mean, it's not uncommon.
That was my life prior to being in Austin because I did two tours. I lived in my car in Florida for about a week and I slept in my car in coming back from Nashville.
Sure.
But I had a Planet Fitness membership. You work out, you eat great. You know what I mean?
Dude, it worked out. Hey,
you know, we all need that oh shit moment in life sometimes. This is a family show, that oh crap moment. Okay.
Yeah.
we all like that time in your life where, like, if you're in football, you got to make a hit. Or, like, if you're doing a power lift or something, that you're doing like a snatch or something that you don't know if you can do. And you just like, it's this all instinct, mind, body, everything.
Yeah, you just got to jump every once in a while, man.
Yeah, that oh crap moment is like, that's the thing that I love, that experience. It's like a drug kind of sometimes.
Well,
like,
yeah, no, I mean, it reminds you that you're alive for sure. Yeah.
So, Alton, growing up, did you always want to be an actor? Like, I don't remember I don't remember a lot from high school. Yeah. Like, if it was anything that you ever talked about or pursuing.
Yeah, I think it was one of those things where it was, like, in high school, like, I would do, like, musicals or plays or stuff here and there. But, I mean, obviously, like, I was, you know, more focused on, you know, I really loved athletics at the time. But, no, I clearly remember from a very young age, like, you know, pretending I was in, you know, TV or film or, like, playing around and stuff like that. I just think that, you know, it just seemed like just some insurmountable thing. Like, you know, you're here in Pennsylvania, that's a world away where those things happen. Like, it just didn't seem like a realistic thing, you know? And then once I got to college and then started, you know, seriously, like, looking into it and doing research and was like, okay, you know what? Like, people do this every day. Mm-hmm. It's doable. It's just, you got to break it down into, like, you know, obtainable goals, you know, and just steps, you know, and then before you know it, you'll get there.
Sure. Is that why you first moved to New York also, to pursue an acting career?
Yeah. I wanted to go to New York. I think a lot of the actors and actresses that I, like, just respected, I think, you know, did time in New York. I really respected the New York theater scene. Also, just the experience of living in New York, you know, just being the day to day, like, people watching, it just was something I wanted to do. But I knew when I went to New York, I knew that that was just a stop. You know, I always knew mm-hmm. that I wanted to get out west.
So when you go out to LA, then what's the like the process like with trying to get work? Do you get a manager right away, or?
You know, that's the crazy thing about, like, the arts, is that everyone has a different story. There's no blueprint, you know? It's not like becoming a doctor or a lawyer. Like, everyone has a different story. So usually I would say start going to acting classes, you know, you get your headshots together, hopefully you're doing some work, you know, picking up some work on your own. And then along the way, you know, you meet agents and managers, and hopefully you get picked up and they'll give you a shot. And then you start doing auditions for bigger things. And, you know, that's kind of how you generate the career.
Have you been doing more auditions now because you're on Zoom and you're like, oh, you need a music. And that, cause we all have nothing to do except sit around and talk to each other on Zoom. So
yeah. Well, I would say, well, because the industry's shut down right now, there's not really many auditions happening. But what some casting directors are doing, they're kind of having general kind of meetings right now. So, you know, I've definitely submitted some work off to casting directors, you know, to meet during this downtime. That's kind of what's happening. Because, yeah, like I said, I think they're still trying to figure out exactly how, you know, being on set is going to work out. And I think they're still, you know, trying to figure that all out, because, you know, one person gets sick, they're going to shut the production down. So, and you know, the thing about TV is it's so timely. Like, you need to get, you know, you have X amount of time to get this episode done because you got to work on the next episode. So it's going to be, you know, I think quite challenging.
Do you think that the media and the industry they're going to basically play around the whole lockdown situation?
I think some shows will. I think you kind of have to.
Right. You know, because, like, I'm watching these shows, like, if I'm ever watching TV at, like, some wherever, I see a movie or a show and I'm like, they're at a bar. I'm like, what kind of anti-American? You know, like, it's just, we can't do that stuff. I wonder if they're going to be like, hey, we need people that are, they gained a lot of weight, look like
I think they're going to have to, you know, it's, you got to call it out, right? You got to just address the situation. And I mean, who knows? There's, some shows may incorporate Zoom, like the concept of Zoom, into the show.
Right.
Episodes, you know, I don't know. It's going to be weird. Yeah.
There's a lot of things that already started on, like, YouTube. There's a show where it's like all child actors. We interviewed Scott Schwartz a while back. And he's on a show on YouTube called The Quarantine Bunch.
Oh, there you go.
So, I mean, like, people are already doing it.
Yeah, they're going to try and figure it out, you know. But, yeah, it's a... Yeah, just such a weird time, you know.
So are you keeping in shape at your place? Are you because you
I'm
know
trying, like, I'm trying my hardest, my friend. I'm trying my hardest. I came back pretty much mid-March, right when it happened in LA, I was like, yeah, we're gonna be shut down for a while. So I flew back in, and one of the first things I did was I got some workout bands. So, you know what I mean? I've been trying to do the band thing, and I'll go for jogs around the neighborhood. Just trying to keep it together as best as possible. Yeah. What about you?
Do you live, how close to the beach do you live?
Oh, I'm on the beach in Dennis.
Oh, that's awesome. I was there once. That's an interesting area. I like that. I was at that gym. What's that? The outdoor
Gold's?
Gym.
Gold's?
Is that what? Yeah, I forget what the. I was under the influence of many liters of alcohol.
It's Venice, dude. Everybody's under the influence of a lot of things. So but yeah, no, I lived in the Valley for a long time, and then last year I moved to Venice Beach, mainly for the bar, because I found a spot a block away from the bar, so it cut down my commute from like an hour each way to work to literally a minute walk, you know. So it was like the best move I could have done.
Do you ever just like go for a drive up the Pacific Coast Highway?
Oh, yeah. And
just like, you just want to, you know, you got all these things going on. You're like, who do I want to date? Do I want this girl or all this girl?
Right. Yeah. This is my daily.
Maybe her daughter, because, you know, yeah, we're 40 and their daughters are like 22. And like, we're in that age range where young people like us too for some reason.
Sure.
Which is great. Like, you know what? Did you guys, when you remember when we were younger and girls our age that were like 18, 19 would like date like a 30-year-old or whatever? And you'd look at them, you'd be like, oh man, what? Like, that guy's old. But now that we're older, we're like, God bless America. Like, it's thank you so much.
Your 30s and coming up on 40s are definitely a weird time. Where, yeah, you learn something new every day, for sure.
So, Alti, tell us about some of your early work.
Well, you know, I'd say like my 20s was literally doing theater, doing a lot of classes, improv comedy, things of that nature. And it was really funny. I look back on this. One of my advisors in college, and it was like my senior year, months before I graduated. And I remember him having a heart-to-heart with me. And he was like, hey, are you going to be okay, like, not working until you're 30? And I was like, what? Why would you say that? He's like, I'm just saying. He goes, you may not grow into yourself until you're older. He's like, are you willing to just kind of take a decade to still try and get there? And I was like, yeah, but like, this is completely just messing with me right now, you know? And then fast forward, I literally booked my first TV job a week before my 30th birthday.
Wow.
I was like, call that one, bud.
Hey, you know what? I think it's awesome at any age. You know what I mean? Like, when you love something,
sure,
to me, there's no time. Like, I'm going to do podcasting and music or whatever until I'm 110. Like, you know, whatever. It's just when you love it, you don't, whether you're homeless or you're rich, you're going to do what you love.
No, for sure, man. And, you know, looking back on it too, it's, I think it took me until around that age to kind of grow into myself and just really be comfortable with myself, because, you know, I got some tattoos and I used to cover those for auditions. And, you know, being from around here, we kind of have like a little bit of a dialect that we talk with. And I would, you know, try to clean that up and be more like down the middle, you know, because that's what they try and do. Some acting schools, they try and get you to be like a general kind of thing. And it wasn't working. So then, you know, I remember I started going to auditions and I wasn't covering my tattoo. And I, you know, maybe my East Coast dialect will come out a little bit more. And then I started working and I was like, oh, okay, I get it. Okay, I get it now, you know? It's just being comfortable in who you are. It just took me a second to be that. You know?
That's the best thing to do.
Yeah.
People don't like, I mean, nobody, like, you can't just have a non-regional diction. I mean, you can train yourself that way.
Right.
When I think people that they yearn for a person's true approach at themselves.
Oh, absolutely. And that's absolutely. Yeah, I agree. But yeah, it's just, you know, there's just, you know, I think no knock on like college acting programs at all. But I do think sometimes they, you know, in the way that they prepare you sometimes, I think it just can kind of screw with the kids' heads a little bit. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I don't really know if there's a better way to do it. I just think that you're kind of coming out. They're not really preparing you for the business side of things. You know, they're teaching you how to act and stuff, but it's like, there's no business of acting. Or maybe there is now at some colleges. I'm sure it's some of the better ones like Yale and NYU, but like, you know, they don't teach you the business side, you know, where it's like, oh, this is typecasting, things of that nature. You figure it out on your own, you know?
Well, I always wondered, like, those acting coaches and stuff, how do they become the teacher? Like, a lot of them you don't even see in movies or television.
Well, I think what it comes down to is, I think a lot of them probably started out as actors, or they started out maybe possibly as casting directors. And, you know, probably along the way, they started coaching their friends on the side and their friends started booking things when they started working with them.
Okay. Right?
And so then you're kind of going, oh, well, maybe I can help other people, and they'll start a classes. You know what I mean? And then, you know, kids in your class start booking, then your name gets out there with agents and managers, you know, especially, and like, let's say you're going through a period where you're just not getting any work. Mm-hmm. You know, your agent might say, hey, why don't you try out so-and-so? I heard good things, right? And then you'll go there and be like, oh, okay. And you know, it's funny, man. You do learn things along the way. It's not hacks. Like, I mean, there was one class in particular. It was an on-camera audition technique class. I learned so much and started booking after I did that class because I learned so many more technical things about the audition process, you know, because auditioning is completely different than acting. It's almost a separate skill set. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because you're literally trying to get a job. Then once you get the job, then you're on set. And now you're like, oh, now I can act.
Yeah.
But the audition to get there is a separate beast that they don't, you know, a lot of like schools don't teach that. Mm-hmm. But when you find a good class like that, you know, it really can, you know, open your career up.
Yeah, so, I talked about that audition process. I listen to Joey Diaz all the time. And he was saying, like, everyone that goes in for an audition is always like, it's always the same thing, the same thing, the same thing, the same thing. So he always said, like, when he goes in, he does something different to try and get noticed, you know, so they remember you, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the way I've always looked at it was like, you know, let's say they bring in 30 people for the role. And it's pretty crazy when you look at the odds of this, right? So even for a small part on a TV show, you're looking at 3,000 to 5,000 submissions for that role, okay? Casting usually will bring in maybe 30 people on that audition, right? And then if they have callbacks, they might bring back 3 or 5 people.
Wow.
And then so if you get it, you're basically 1 out of 5,000, right? So once you get the audition, it's like, okay, I'm already, for whatever reason, I'm already like in this small percentage, right? So you just got to stay positive with the whole thing. And then, you know, I think there's a lot of good actors out there. And I think the majority of auditions are good. You know, but there's only a handful that are really bad, and there's a handful that are great, you know, and it's just always trying to like be on the great side of things. And I mean, I have friends too, like put buttons on the end of scenes or something. And if it's right, like I'll do that too. But I think the best thing you can do is just be real in the moment, make, you know, like keep your stakes high, not overact, just be real, you know, and that's worked the best for me and for my friends I book too.
What's a button?
So button would be at the end of this, like right at the end of the scene. Like, let's say your character would have like, let's say the other character, the person you're reading with may have the last line of dialogue. You may add another line of dialogue at the end, like something funny or cute,
right?
You know, just to kind of be, and some casting offices are cool with that. And some are like, what are you doing? Like, why would you, that's not on the page. What's wrong with you? But you know, if it's right and you can kind of feel if they're how they are, you know, and sometimes that works for you.
Oh, sorry, Jim. On my other show, Deluxe Edition, we talked to Larry Hankin, who played mm-hmm. Mr. Heckles, and he was told a great story about, I can't remember who the director was or who the casting person was, but he said that he came in for this interview for an audition, and the guy just said, don't try to be funny. People have been trying to make me laugh all day. I just want you to look for, there's a key in this room. Just look for the key.
Yeah.
And he said he just looked for this key for, he said he couldn't remember how long. And the guy said, okay, thank you, Larry. We'll be in touch. And he's like, I got the job. He's like, I don't know what.
That's what I'm saying. Sometimes you just don't know. Like, you're like, so, the best thing I can say is like, the way to get work is just do really good work, you know, and being prepared is usually 90% of it, you know, because some people, you get your script the night before, your sides. You know, you got to know them inside and out. It's not that you got to memorize them, but you got to be on it. Like, you got to do your work, because you can see so much a person that looked at their sides for an hour before the audition and a person that like is in it, you know? And a lot of actors, and I've been guilty of this too. Sometimes you don't prepare, and it certainly shows sometimes, because, you know, you don't feel connected.
Also, when they're trying to find somebody, like they're probably in their mind looking for something that's mm-hmm. so minute, and a lot of times like they probably don't find it in people. It's like not that you're a bad actor or you're a good actor or whatever, it's just like they want this one look. It's like a model. Like they're like, oh, that person yeah. just wasn't looking at that leaf the right way. They were looking at the branch. And I'm like, I told them to look at the leaf. And the person, like, didn't, they were like, I'm reading something. And they're like, no, I wanted you to look like you were
right.
burning a hole through it or something. Like there's so many weird little things that they just.
Yeah. And like, you know, the, it'll drive you crazy if you constantly think about that because right. you can only control so much, you know? So it's like, do the best you can. And, you know, like, I think sometimes actors get freaked out with casting directors because, you know, sometimes they can come off as cold, even though they're not being cold, but they've probably seen 300 people that day and they're just kind of okay. You know what I mean? They're doing their mm-hmm. job. But yeah, you just got to stay like present, focused, do your work. And if they want you to do something else, they'll usually be like, okay, let's do another take. And they'll usually give you a note, you know, because they want you to get the job because it literally makes their job easier because then they're like, okay, we just cast one more role, next thing, you know? So they're like in your corner, you know, even though sometimes it may not feel that way.
Sure.
Like, do you ever use, so you've probably had to play different characters. Do you ever use a person from high school that you knew? Because like all the experiences that we went through in high school, like, and sure. like, and as a kid, I think even in like college for all those people that went to college, like there's these things that like build you and they're like, okay, you need to be like this dick or this, you got to like have this character. Yeah. And you're like, oh, okay. I'm going to act like, you know, Zach or I'll be like, oh, Jim Adam would say, or like somebody like somebody like,
you know, I definitely think like, yeah, I've definitely like had real people influence ideas that I've had. And also, you know, a lot of times like for the person, the other character I'm reading against in a scene, I will usually pick a pretty strong substitution of someone from my personal life, you know, to kind of imagine that I'm reading with, just to kind of, you know, keep it real and kind of elicit, you know, some things.
Yeah, I've always, you know, because I think the best way to learn sometimes is being around a lot of people too. Like we learn, sure, that's how we stay sharp.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. So yeah, no, definitely done that.
You went to HGA too,
right? I did until, and then I switched over in eighth grade. That's when I went to Muhlenberg.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember you a little bit. I don't think we talked much though.
No. But no, I remember you too, man. You were always doing funny shit.
Yeah, I
still is.
I know.
Well, I guess class clown doesn't take anywhere in life once you go.
So Alti, do you besides acting, you also I read that you do some writing too, right? You wrote some.
Yeah,
stuff?
I wrote a short film that me and my crew put together. We filmed it in August. And right now it's on the festival circuit, which is a weird festival season because obviously it's going to be all online. But yeah, we have it out to a whole lot of festivals right now. It's a 10-minute short. And, you know, hopefully, well, once we get through the festival circuit, obviously, if I get in anything, I'll let you guys know, you know, to view it online. But at the end of it, I'll probably try and get it up on Amazon Prime or something, you know, something like that. But
nice.
Yeah, it was funny. I didn't write for a while and I just kind of, one night, literally, I kicked out, you know, I was like, let's just kick out something. And I don't know why I kicked out a romantic comedy script. Wasn't planning on a rom-com. It just came out. And I said, okay. And then I sent it to my buddy who directed it. And I said, take a look at this and, you know, let me know what you think. And he goes, all right, let's do it. I was like, okay. So yeah, it took about 4 days, but it was, yeah, really fun experience, man. It was nice to be writing again.
Nice. Yeah. What's that process like where you write something and then, I mean, it's got to try and get something made. It's.
Yeah. I mean, the good news is now it's a lot easier because, you know, we can do so much ourselves with the technology sure. we have, you know, obviously what you guys are doing right now. Yeah. I, you know, for me, I think it was just, I thought of a simple story plot, you know, and for me, it was kind of like, I would say that the movie is based off of like, is a missed opportunity really a missed opportunity? Or is it an opportunity, you know? So I think sometimes people dwell on the negative side of things instead of just kind of flowing with things and going, oh, okay, what's this direction, right? So that was kind of the idea I had in my head. And then as far as characters, yeah, I kind of think I pulled probably characters from my past to kind of put them together and see how that was going to work out. And yeah, and then I just kind of, you know, was trying to, you know, I think I tried to pick characters that were very different from one another. And then the dialogue kind of flowed naturally because you're like, well, this would be a weird conversation for these two types of people to have, you know? And then you just kind of work it and see what happens.
I was going to make a, well, I was talking to a friend years ago. She was kind of in the showbiz a little bit, but she wanted to make a movie out of my book that I wrote with my an ex-girlfriend that passed away. And she was like, who would, she goes, I was like, who would play me? Did you ever have someone come up to you and ask you who do you think would play you? And I thought about it and she looks me dead in the eye and she's like, Nicolas Cage, because you're weird and you're kind of quirky and yeah. You're kind of these weird mannerisms. You're always like this. And I was thinking about it. And I was like, yeah.
That's fantastic. I can actually
you ever think about who would play you?
I'd love to give Jeremy Piven a shot because I think he would tap into some of my things.
I can definitely see that, man.
Yeah, well, there's I found out, I don't know if you guys saw this, but I guess Barstool Sports was, I guess, somehow they, I think they wanted Piven to do a Ari and Lloyd spinoff from Entourage. So Piven, like, did a little video back at Barstool Sports and was like, hey, let's make some phone calls and see if this can happen. And I was like, dude. Yes, I was like, please give me a shot. Just give me a shot. Get in the office. That's all I want.
That would be awesome.
I sell cars and have hair on my balls. The end. Such an underrated movie, too.
I never saw the movie.
Oh, it's Sell Hard.
Oh, okay. No, I was talking about the Entourage movie. I never saw the Entourage movie.
Oh. Yeah.
I never saw the Entourage movie either, but Jimbo, you're talking about the one with where they're all car salesmen, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that was where they fall. Oh,
I didn't
out
see
of the
that.
Plane.
Now I do Sell Hard. I'll check it out.
Yeah.
Where Will Ferrell falls out of the plane, right? And he has the wrong bag
with the dildo. It was accidental. His backpack had dildos in it instead of a parachute.
Perfect. I'll check it out.
So when you come. If possibly, if you come back to you're Reading, right? Around Reading.
Yeah. My parents are over by Trooper Thorns.
Okay, cool.
Back in the good old days was awesome.
Right.
You could walk down the street for a pint of beer. Yeah. Now I just walk down the street and I get sad.
Dude, I just drove by Troopers the other day and I was looking at it, and I was just like remembering all those days where like I would go in there and just be completely, you know. Am I drinking? I'm sorry. I was a sinful drinking man, which I still am a little bit last night. I got kind of a little tipsy. But I was just looking at dead clothes. Like, I mean, nothing on. And I was like, wow, what have we come to? And then I started drinking at my house alone. So
that's what we're all doing. that's just where it heads. It's terrible.
What's your go-to at home alone, just being a lone man in his bed, probably no pants on, shirtless? Some sort of snack. What's your drink of choice while in bed?
Well, it depends. Like, you know, if I'm just gonna sip on something, I'll sip on some whiskey, probably some bourbon. Or I've kind of been on a mezcal kick the last like year or two, so I do like me some smoky, delicious mezcal. Okay. That is what I'll sip. You know, while I'm home, I try and get as much lager in as I can because you can't get it out west. But I do like my IPAs as well. Yeah, that's kind of where I live.
I've been in the tequila mixed with White Claw.
Woo!
Combined.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, hey, you can call me white girl drunk all you want, but hey, I feel great, man. The next day, I'm like waking up. I'm like, all right, let's work out today, you know?
You know, it's funny because I would knock like White Claw and Truly forever. And then, you know, I'd go to some football Rams games out in LA. You know, we'd always tailgate. And the thing is out there, you guys can imagine, until about November, some of those games are like 90 to 100 degrees with the sun just beating down on you. So I, you know, started experimenting with White Claws and felt so much better than just drinking beer in like that heat. And you're like, okay, this is fine. I'm cool.
I got you, man. I'm right there with you. Plus, I'm getting older. I like the light stuff now.
Yeah, now I feel it. I know.
Well, before we wrap, I like to just put this question out there. What advice do you have to give to all the viewers and listeners? Like my dad always said, to put in your pocket and to keep with you And then you can take out years later and be like, oh yeah, like what do you have to leave to people? A word of encouragement or
forward like a thinking? General world, like word of encouragement of just like,
yeah, for people trying to pursue their dreams in acting, even though like it's hard now in any art, like anything's hard, you know, what are tips that you can leave to people about picking up and leaving, going to that city? You know, like you went off of $2,000 or whatever to LA. Across sure. the country, you were driven by that. What you know, what can you leave to people to go do something that they're meant to do and pursue the treasures of their heart?
Stop thinking and do it. It's that easy. Nike came up with a perfect slogan back in the 70s, and it's cliche, but it's true. It's like working out, right? It's like you wake up and you start thinking about why you shouldn't work out that day, or you got other things. Oh, it's going to crunch my time. And then before you know it, you don't work out in 3 weeks and you're out of shape, right?
Right.
Instead of just waking up and just going to the gym or going for that run, don't think about it. Just do it. Because like I said before, the literally the worst case scenario, it doesn't work out and you come home and you go, well, I gave it a shot. That's it. You know, that's mm-hmm. it.
Just like Shia LaBeouf.
That's it. I love that, man.
Just do it.
That's it.
Yeah. I got you, man.
But, you know, I do think, you know, and I know that's easier said than done, but if you really want to try, you have to try. You know, you can't talk about it. You just got to go.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah.
Well, this has been fun, man. It was good seeing you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
We appreciate you doing it. Absolutely. And tell everyone where they can find you. Do you have anything where anyone can find you, any of your movies or your work out there?
I'm sure I have a reel or two probably up on YouTube somewhere. So you can probably just put my name in. Other than that, I'm on Instagram and Facebook. And, you know, I kind of post those a little bit here and there. But, yeah, I think just if you Google my name in a search engine, I'm sure enough stuff will come up.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome, man.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you, man.
Okay. Thank you all.